from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. A new case of coronavirus confirmed in Northern California could be the first sign the disease may be spreading within a U.S. community. We'll get the latest on the case and hear about President Trump's announcement that Vice President Pence will head up the national response to the virus. Then at 9:30, when historian Lonnie Bunch was offered the position of founding director of the National Museum of African American History and Culture, he tried to talk himself out of it. The museum had no staff or collection, just the daunting mission to document the African-American experience and help the nation understand its dark racial past. Bunch took the job, and he recounts the museum's creation in his new book, A Fool's Errand. Join us next, after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. A new Solano County coronavirus case confirmed yesterday by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention could represent the first spread of the virus within the United States. Meanwhile, President Trump has named Vice President Pence to head up the response to the outbreak and is clashing with Congress and public health officials over the gravity of the threat posed by the coronavirus. We're going to get the latest on the California case and the federal response to coronavirus. Joining me first is Art Reingold. He's professor and head of the Division of Epidemiology at UC Berkeley School of Public Health. And Professor Reingold, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Good morning, Michael. Good to be with you.
Good morning to you. And let's just begin by determining as best we can at this point what this patient's exposure being unknown means, or the source being unknown. If there's no direct contact with someone from an affected country, then it's likely that there are other undetected cases out there, is it not?
Well, I think that's exactly right. You know, basically, assuming this bears out as reported yesterday, it means that this individual became infected without travel and without contact with somebody who had been in an affected area, which means that the virus is circulating at least to some extent here in the United States, or at least here in Northern California.
Which is why they're calling it a community transmission. And it means, doesn't it, that doctors should perhaps start testing anyone maybe with a fever or a cough, though the testing capacity is pretty limited.
Well, as you say, the testing capacity has been limited because CDC has been, you know, working as hard as it can to get test kits out to state health departments. There were a few hiccups in that process, but the result has been that up until now, testing of patients has really required sending samples to Atlanta, with the delay that that results in. And in addition, the testing has focused on people who are clinically ill, and where there's a suspicion that this virus might be involved. So there hasn't been much in the way of testing of a much wider array of people.
Well, the confirmation has to be done through the CDC, but this patient wasn't tested because essentially it didn't meet the criteria that the CDC puts for.
Right. And so the problem is that fundamentally, if we're not testing other people, then clearly we're not going to be able to detect this virus and its circulation in the community. There is a plan, I should point out, that's been being put forward where patients with a flu-like illness who are being already tested for influenza in a number of cities, including San Francisco, L.A., Seattle, New York, Chicago, would be then automatically, if they're negative for flu, be tested for the novel coronavirus. And I believe the hope is to get that set up quite expeditiously.
We're talking with Art Reingold. He's professor and head of the Division of Epidemiology at the UC Berkeley School of Public Health. I'm wondering, Professor Reingold, if you could give us a picture, as best you can, of what it would mean if the virus starts circulating, and it does so. I mean, first of all, it seems to prompt the necessity for a great deal more surveillance, but what does that mean in terms of epidemiological action?
Well, I think you've put your finger on a major question, which is, First of all, if the and I should point out that coronaviruses that cause the common cold do circulate widely and are pretty readily transmissible from one person to another. So I think what many people have suspected about the new one is that it's going to be capable of doing the same thing, that most people who get infected will be asymptomatic. There may be some people with a minor illness, and that the people who get hospitalized, get very sick and potentially die are the tip of the iceberg. So I think this would, you know, this would suggest that those predictions are likely to be correct, and that we really can't wall off the United States from the rest of the world, given that this virus is now circulating in probably at least 40 or 50 countries, if not more than that.
I know that there are many of you who are listening who have questions and concerns, and so let me invite you to join us now with Art Reingold. You can do that by calling in at our toll-free number. The number to call is 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786 is, again, the number for your calls. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions you might have to forum@kqed.org. And I want to actually ask you about the vaccine, if I could, Professor Reingold. The vaccine that the president thinks is right around the corner, but we have people like Dr. Anthony Fauci saying it's going to take at least a year. It's not something that can be done quickly and so forth. So we're getting mixed messages.
Well, I was on a call the other night with about a half a dozen of the major manufacturers who are working quickly in China, here, elsewhere, to try and quickly develop a vaccine. I think the good news is they're doing it at remarkable, unprecedented speed. The bad news is that that still means, as you alluded to, that we're almost certainly not going to have a vaccine that we can be confident in and start giving to large numbers of people for at least 12 to 18 months. So it's clearly not the answer in the immediate future.
And Governor Newsom plans to hold a news conference next hour, actually at 10:30, to discuss the state's response to the novel coronavirus. We'll carry it live. What would you like to hear from the governor?
Well, frankly, you know, what I would like to hear from the governor is that there will be more robust support for the state health department and for local public health, county health departments, because while they certainly may get some infusion of funding from the federal government as a result of the funds that Washington is talking about, the real problem is that, those tend to be episodic in response to a problem and then to fade away. And what we really need is a more robust public health infrastructure with reliable, ongoing support at the state level. So I guess what I'd like to hear from the governor is that the state is going to invest more in its Department of Public Health and in the county health departments.
Again, Art Reingold is professor and head of the Division of Epidemiology at the UC Berkeley School of Public Health. I want to bring Tolu Olurunipa into this. He's a national political reporter for The Washington Post, and good to have you with us. Welcome.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you.
I'd like to actually ask you about the confusion that's coming out of Washington. I alluded to it before, getting mixed messages from the president to some degree obviously trying to downplay this. But there's a lot of criticism of Mike Pence being put in charge of this. They're pointing out that, Pence warned about a myth a long time ago called global warming. He called it a myth. He doesn't have any scientific background. What are you hearing in the nation's capital, particularly from political people?
Yeah, definitely this has been a source of concern, especially for critics of the administration and for people who are just watching this, wanting to get information from the government that they can trust. They say that Mike Pence is someone who does not have a scientific background, who has a political interest in protecting the president, and who has spent a lot of his time, a lot of his public messaging praising President Trump for his handling of this crisis, not spending as much time talking about how to protect the American people, giving advice for what people should be doing. It seems like he has been more interested in giving cover to the president and having someone who's so politically connected to the president in charge of a national security crisis is something that has given pause to a lot of the people watching this and wondering whether or not someone who has a background in science would be a better pick to lead this effort.
Are you hearing that criticism from Republicans as well as Democrats?
Well, Republicans have held their fire for the most part, but some of them have asked very pointed questions about what is happening within the administration. It's not clear with this pick of Vice President Mike Pence to lead this effort what happens to the existing task force that was being led by the Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar. There's some questions among Republicans of what Azar will be doing now. He's been testifying on the Hill today, and there's a question of whether or not he is being demoted or what is happening by Pence being put in charge. And I think just the fact that there's confusion coming out of the administration at a time when Republicans and Democrats want clarity, want to be able to tell their constituents what's going on, is part of the reason why that even some Republicans are asking very tough and direct questions to the administration to get a sense of what really is happening.
Talu, could you also talk about just the cuts that have come under the Trump administration? I mean, I'm talking about a budget proposal that takes away $1.3 billion from the CDC. But also when John Bolton was around, there was a global health team that was essentially, well, effaced from the earth, as it were. I mean, there's been a lot of cuts, and a lot of cuts that many people are very serious about.
Yeah, and all of those cuts were things that the administration praised and said that were necessary. But now that we are in the midst of a potential crisis, they are looking for ways to try to backfill some of those potential cuts and cuts to personnel. President Trump was asked about his budget yesterday by one of my colleagues, and he said, you know, we can always put people back in. We don't want people there when there's no emergency. We can always find the people when the emergency happens. And obviously, that's not how it works with federal contracting and with federal employees. You can't just bring people on if you have cut the budget significantly and if you've gotten rid of the global health pandemic team that was on the National Security Council. They still haven't filled that position. There's still a lot of empty positions, and they're now trying to build up and trying to appoint a task force and people who can help with this process. But we're now seeing sort of the impact of not having people in place, not having a strategy, and having to try to build all of that up while you're in the midst of trying to fight off a crisis.
There are two-thirds of the jobs at DHS that have no Senate appointees. I mean, we're in a reactive mode, which doesn't really make a lot of sense. Let me bring in some callers here, and let's begin, if I may, with you, Todd. You're on the air. Good morning.
Oh, great. Thanks for taking my call. One of the things that the physicians on your panel brought out was the fact that there could be a lot of people with coronavirus that are asymptomatic. And so the question is, are we really confident that the mortality rate of this virus is 2-3%? To what extent do we know what the denominator of folks with the virus in China actually is what we think it is?
That's a very important question. Let me go to Art Reingold on that, Professor Reingold.
So I think I'm prepared to wait a little while to see what the case fatality is after we have more information. But you're absolutely right. That case fatality is basically taking the people who were diagnosed as having this illness and looking at what proportion of them died. And of the people who've been diagnosed in China are overwhelmingly people who were fairly ill and sought out medical care. So there undoubtedly are large numbers of people infected with no symptoms. They're not included in that calculation. And most likely there are large numbers of people with very mild illnesses who either didn't get care or didn't get tested or didn't seek care who are also not counted. So if you're going to talk about what proportion of everybody who gets infected who dies, it's clearly going to be a much smaller proportion than 2%.
I wonder, Professor Reingold, what you tell a listener who emails us saying he or she is wondering what the tipping point is between staying at home versus being sick enough to have to go to the hospital. What symptoms or severity of symptoms would require a hospital visit?
Well, of course, you know, the reality is that care seeking for illness is quite variable. It varies by culture, varies by health insurance status, by distance to the provider, by many, many things. We want people to seek care when they are ill, and where medical care or a diagnosis might be helpful, but it's kind of hard to answer that question generically for everybody because, you know, some people really prefer to tough it out at home. Other people prefer to go to a provider fairly early with milder symptoms. So I don't think there's a single answer to that question.
Well, I wonder if there's a single answer to a question I have for you, Tolu Olurunipa. And again, Tolu Olurunipa is a national political reporter for The Post. What about funding battle now between the president and Congress? Where do things stand, particularly in light of this?
Yeah, this is a rare instance in which Democrats and Republicans are fighting over how much money to spend. And the fight is about spending more money, not trying to cut back. President Trump put his emergency funding request through to Congress, and it was $2.5 billion in total, including some repurposed money.
Yeah, but forgive me, you got Chuck Schumer asking for about $8.5 billion, so there's quite a gap there.
That's exactly right. Democrats are saying that the Trump emergency request is not enough. It's not up to the task in terms of the size of this crisis. And they're calling for more money. You heard from President Trump yesterday saying, OK, if they want more money, then we'll give it to them. We'll not fight this. And it seems like we may get a consensus somewhere in the middle of $4 or $5 billion. The Trump administration has tried to downplay this, and they've used all kinds of different messaging strategies. And having a smaller emergency request is one way to say that this is not as big of a crisis as we may think it is. But Democrats in Congress are saying there's no need for politicking around this. Let's give all the money that's required to solve this issue, to face it, and to make sure that it doesn't spread rapidly. So I would expect that that $2.5 billion request will be much less than what ultimately gets pushed by Congress. There are not too many fiscal conservatives left in Congress anymore, so there's not really too much concern about the deficit or the debt. It's really about just solving this issue, and it's likely that both Republicans and Democrats in Congress want to spend more money than the $2.5 billion that the White House has called for.
And again, Tolu Olurunipa is a national political reporter with The Washington Post. Trump is actually accusing his political opponents of weaponizing the outbreak against him, isn't he, Tolu?
Yes, he is. He's blamed Nancy Pelosi. He's blamed various Democrats, saying that they are accusing him of not doing a good job, that even if he was able to cure the crisis and solve all of the problems, they would still accuse him of not doing it fast enough. He blamed Democrats for the drop in the stock market, which didn't really make sense because the markets dropped before the Democratic debate, which he said was the cause of the drop in the markets. The president is definitely taking a different tactic than we've seen previous presidents in the middle of natural disasters or public health emergencies where they've tried to rise above politics. The president has really jumped right into it. He's in the middle of a reelection campaign, and he's using every opportunity to attack his opponents, including the people who are running for president who want to replace him. And it's likely that politics will be a major part of this crisis just because the president is looking at his reelection, and he's looking at the stock market and looking at all of the criticism that he's getting. And he is backed into to a corner and really fighting back in a very political way, something that you normally don't see in these types of crises. But President Trump is different from most presidents, and he has shown no compunction about infusing politics into areas that haven't had politics before.
This is, again, a wonderful example of the non-normative. Let me get more callers on air. Rachel joining us next. Rachel, you're on the air.
Hi. So my question is for Professor Reingold. And my question is, he said he'd like to see Newsom devote more money to the state public health department to make it, quotes, more robust. So my question is, what does he see as the most serious deficiencies in that system right now, especially pertaining to the virus? And I'll take my message off the air.
All right, Rachel, thank you for that call. Dr. Reingold?
Well, I know quite a few people at the Department of Public Health and at the local and county health departments, and, of course, they're working 24-7 at the moment to try and mount the best response they can in a coordinated fashion with the federal government and the like. So I do think that you know, hardworking public health people are on the job, but I would say that there are too few of them, and that typically all the programs that one could pull from to mount an effective response are basically understaffed and underfunded. And so in terms of surveillance, in terms of response capabilities, in terms of the laboratory support, of course, we're in much better shape than many low and middle income countries around the world. So that's the good news. But, you know, the tendency is when public health is working and there don't appear to be problems, it seems to be a fairly easy budget to reduce or to not pay attention to. And then, of course, when a problem develops, people want action and they want answers. And then there's an infusion of funds that's there for a year or two, and then it tends to disappear. participate.
Well, Art Reingold, I've got a listener named Catherine who writes, I'm a private practice family doctor in Los Gatos. I have no infrastructure to support me in getting nasal swab kits quickly and the volume I may need, not to mention where to find send specimens on suspected patients. What's my most up-to-date site to get information?
Well, I would hope that that issue is going to be at least partially resolved, if not by tomorrow, if it hasn't already been, quite soon, because, you know, the kits that at least for PCR testing of respiratory tract specimens are meant to already be at the California Department of Public Health Laboratory and available for testing here in the lab in Richmond. I'm not sure whether they're there yet, but they should be there any day. I think the availability of testing more broadly out in commercial laboratories or university laboratories, to be honest, I'm not exactly sure how quickly or where that exists, but the hope is that at least the ability to test specimens from appropriate individuals is pretty much either already here in the Bay Area or will be within a couple of days.
And let me, if I may, ask you a couple of quick email questions that are coming in from listeners that I think are pretty direct. One listener asks, is just any hand soap sufficient for hand washing it, or do we need to use antibacterial soap?
No, I think that we have plenty of evidence that it's that regular soap is just fine. In fact, regular soap used correctly in terms of good hand washing practices is probably even better than some of these products, you know, these alcohol-based products. At the end of the day, we want people to exercise frequent and good hand washing, but soap and water, regular soap is just fine.
And Rosie wants to know, Art Reingold, what are the chances that this new virus might mutate into something more virulent?
So, you know, we don't know. This is a virus, an RNA virus, that certainly can mutate quickly, and we're just going to have to wait and see. It's possible the virus will, in fact, move in the direction of being less virulent over time. The possibility it could mutate into something more virulent is theoretically possible. Frankly, I'll be a little surprised if that happens. I think, if anything, it's likely to go in the other direction.
And we've got seconds left here. Tulu Olorunipa, I'd like to find out from you what people should be watching and looking for in terms of what's going on in Washington, to the best of your ability.
Well, I would definitely say read the Washington Post, listen to your local news stations on the radio and on television. We do expect to hear from Vice President Pence later today. He's going to be holding a meeting of the task force, and there will be daily news coming out of the CDC and likely coming out of this task force. So pay attention to what the government officials are saying and make sure you're reading your news as well to get unbiased information about what's happening with this virus.
And stay up to date, of course, by listening to us here on the Forum program and throughout the day on KQED Public Radio. Again, we're going to bring you Governor Gavin Newsom's news conference, this next hour at 10:30 a.m. on the coronavirus. I want to thank Art Reingold. Good to have you with us. Pleasure to have you.
Good to be with you, Michael.
And Tulu Olorunipa, thank you for joining us. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
And thank you, our listeners. Another segment of Forum is up ahead. We're going to actually talk with the head of the Smithsonian Institutes. Lonnie Bunch joins us. He is actually has a major responsibility for founding the National Museum of African American History and Culture. That's next. I'm Michael Krasny.